internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 387 for Wednesday, the 13th of November, 2013. I'm Dave Neal in the UK, up in the Lincolnshire, and down there towards the south of the country is Harry Lloyd. Good evening, Harry.
Yeah, how's it going, Dave? It's getting a bit chilly over here in the UK, unlike in Spain.
Yes, watching the weather over the weekend, it's like, yeah, I would rather be out there than I would be stuck here in 6 degrees and 3 inches of rain.
Yeah, but, oh well. So it's a pretty big show this week, what with two championships being wrapped up and the season coming to an end.
Yeah, what a great weekend of racing. It was nice that it didn't clash with anything else. No BSB to clash with, no World Superbikes to clash with, and Formula One doesn't even come onto the radars. I don't care about four wheels. But yeah, just a fantastic show of racing, both through Moto3. Moto2 was okay. MotoGP was just fantastic for the first half a dozen laps or more. But more, obviously, we're going to come on to that later on, as is the general way of the show. This week, we've got a couple of little interviews. Jim's been busy. What have we got, mate?
Yeah, he's not done too bad. Well, first up, we have Jeremy Toy from Macau. And then we have a bit of an unknown racer as our next interview. He's just starting to make it onto the world stage. Jim's managed to get hold of some kid called Mark Marquez. I don't know. Apparently, he's quite quick.
Yeah,
not too sure.
Yeah, you know, once he gets used to the bike he's riding, apparently he's going to be a bit swift.
Yeah, so big thanks to Paul Kelly and everyone at Indianapolis for helping Jim sort that out.
Thanks, guys.
And that'll be really interesting to listen to. I haven't listened to it yet because Jim's literally just finished it a couple of hours ago. And then Jim might also have another interview or two by the time the show goes up. So that'll be a bit of a surprise for everyone involved.
Hopefully before next week, for the show next week, and I've been sadly lacking with interviews of late. I'm hoping to get James Ellison and Neil Hodgson on the show for next week. Fingers crossed, and work and everything permitting. If not, certainly for the week after.
Yeah, those should be some good interviews, especially Neil Hodgson's. He's really good now that he's started doing some more commentary and stuff.
Yeah, and managing the Lowe's twins as well.
Oh, is he their manager? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Handy.
Yeah, so, it's to get a bit of an insight into what the boys do. I've also put an email in to Sam as well, to see if he'll come on the show and have a chat. But as he's bless him, he's busy doing what Sam does all the time, and he's golfing, he's training, he's everything else, and the little shit's still to get back to me. So I chase him up, it's all right.
Yeah, that happens sometimes.
He's done an interview with us before for Paddock Chatters, and so's Alex. I wouldn't mind getting Alex on as well.
It's a long off season, so there's plenty of time.
Yeah, exactly. We've got plenty of time, and if I make it down to the bike show, you know, I'm not allowed to call it the bike show. That's because I'm old. if I get down to Motorcycle Live at Birmingham in a couple of weeks' time, I'll catch up with the boys then.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind going to that either, but that's something we'll have to wait and organise. Anyway, enough waffling on. I guess should get straight into it. So first up, we have some awesome friends of the show. Some donators. We have Morten Johansson and James Clement that Jim has literally just added to the show notes. So that was some very good timing on his part. luckily our babbling on lined up with that. And obviously every little bit helps. So, you know, if you can go hit that donate or even that subscribe button, then that's a huge help to us, just paying all the hosting fees and all the admin fees and everything like that. It really helps. So
absolutely. Donna aren't cheap.
No, definitely not. But yeah, on to listener feedback. Dave, do you want to read out what the listener feedback is?
Absolutely. Sam Dixon. He says, hello from the Oregon. Good man. You're learning. I find the Rossi Burgess split to be very interesting. To me, it was always assumed that when the split happened, it would be due to retirement, either by JB or VR. However, it sounds like Burgess is planning to continue next year, which he should because he's under contract to Yamaha for 2014 as well. It seems there must be some sort of rift between them due to a lack of true competitiveness. Is it really possible that Rossi believes so strongly in his ability that he blames Burgess for his mediocre results this season? Mediocre, that's kind of a harsh word to use if you actually look at his results, but we'll come on to that. I understand that sometimes a change is necessary. I just don't see how you believe removing one of the greatest minds in Grand Prix racing makes any sense. Does he really think a different crew chief will be able to set the bike up that much better? Or is he simply trying to create new motivation for himself by making the situation somewhat uncomfortable? I wonder if Rossi secretly thinks he could have been successful on the Desmo with a different crew chief. No.
Yeah, I don't think anyone can have made that thing better.
Obviously, we don't have all the information, and there's probably some things we don't know. Absolutely right, Sam. We don't know the full story. But it's interesting you put this, because I did a little article on Paddock Chatter in the week about this exact story. And it comes to pass, it's exactly the same thing as Tiger Woods. When he wasn't reaching the heights he was previously, he sacked his caddy, Steve Williams, who'd been with him for 13 years, 70-odd major titles, multi-millions of pounds, and four porn stars, allegedly. And it smacks to me that it's the same thing with Valentino. He's done everything he can, and he's now looking for reasons to why he's not as fast as he was. It's certainly in my opinion, what he needs to do is look in the mirror. He's going to be 35 years old next time out. And Marc Marquez is 14 years younger. Lorenzo's 8 years younger. For me personally, he doesn't have the pace. The bike's been developed by Lorenzo, so it carries the corner speed. It's not the bike that Rossi left. And, you know, Father Time waits for no man. And Valentino Rossi is no different. Regardless of his status in the sport, he will always be one of the greatest of all time. But everybody's time, it comes to a point where they've got to think, let's go to World Superbike and win that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I completely agree with what you're saying. This was pretty much the biggest news outside of the World Champions this week from Valencia. And there were a lot of people saying that, you know, Rossi didn't handle it right. But I think that regardless, it's a very difficult situation for Rossi to handle. And has he made the right decision? I personally don't think so. I mean, you look at every rider that Jeremy Burgess has worked with, all of them have had amazing success. And obviously, lots down to the rider, but a lot is down to the crew chief. There is no mind in MotoGP that is better than Jeremy Burgess at what he does. He has more world championships than any rider. And yeah, I agree with what a lot of people are saying, that this perhaps wasn't very well handled by Valentino, but
he deserved more than that. The respect was more. Just the way it was leaked on the Wednesday night, reading off Moto Matters and Superbike Planet. You know, and he didn't even speak to Jeremy Burgess until the Thursday.
Yeah, my favorite quote from that whole bit was Jeremy saying, "Oh yeah, when I got invited into the motorhome, I knew it wasn't for the Christmas bonus." So that made me smile a bit. But yeah, the whole
he's a wily old Aussie.
Yeah, the whole press conference, Burgess seemed very uncomfortable with it, and I don't know. It just it seemed bad. And the new crew, I don't know. Just from the bits of testing I've watched when I've had some free time, the new crew chief seems a bit left out and a bit odd one out. I mean, he doesn't really have much experience in MotoGP, especially with the current brakes and tires and bikes. He spent most of his time in superbikes. So to me, the new crew chief seems a bit out of left field, but that's just how I see it. Well, only time will tell how Silvano Galbisera is Rossi's new crew chief. And yeah, as I was saying, he just seems a bit out of place and he looks a bit lonely, to be honest. It looks like he doesn't really have any friends, which I mean, it's understandable because most of the people in Rossi's team, like Burgess and Brent and all those people, they've worked with Burgess since before Rossi, and Burgess handpicked a lot of them. So that was a very tight-knit group of people. And especially since they were all Aussies, or in Brent's case, a Kiwi, over in Europe together. So obviously that's going to knit them closer together.
But yeah, they travel together, don't they, as well? It's not just being at the races together. They travel together and they travel as a team.
Yeah, it is. It's very much a little family unit. So ripping essentially the father figure out of that family unit, I mean, I think it's confirmed that all of the crew will stay on, but it must be hard especially for them to adapt to a new way of working after so many years. Now just another guy comes in, and obviously there was that tiny bit of a language barrier already working with Valentino and then Japanese mechanics, but now there's just that extra bit of now having an Italian crew chief that potentially just slows things down a bit, you know?
But it's a strange appointment that you bring in somebody in with he has no MotoGP experience.
Yeah.
He's come from Marco Melandri with the field racing. We're running the gold bet BMW squad from last year. He was Marco Melandri's crew chief. And now on the BMW S1000 RR, now he's on a full factory, full fat, six sugars, full cream Yamaha M1. And it's just a completely different animal. I don't understand what Valentino hopes to achieve by this. Okay, bringing in a new pair of eyes, a new brain to have a look at things and new motivation is great. But really, at his level, surely an already experienced crew chief or an experienced senior mechanic in MotoGP would have been a better option.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not like they're short of mechanics or crew chiefs even. There's Houseworth now that Spies is gone. There's Nicky Hayden's old Ducati crew chief. There's a bunch of experienced guys around who could have done the job. So yeah, it does seem a bit weird. They've worked together once before when Rossi had that superbike test when he came back from his broken leg. So maybe he really impressed him then when they worked with the R1. But
I think that's what he credits him with when they worked on the R1. But he also Stoner's crew. I think, aren't they all available next year?
Yeah, because, they're all getting kicked off Mark Marquez's crew.
he's bringing his old crew with him.
Yeah, so there's got to be at least one smart cookie there that they could poach, but I don't know. It's a matter of wait and see, I think.
It is. But, to answer Sam's questions in his listener feedback, does he really think a different crew chief will be able to set the bike up that much better? Yes, he clearly does. Or is he simply trying to create new motivation for himself by making the situation somewhat uncomfortable? He's trying to create new motivation for himself with a new crew chief. Both the questions answer themselves in the same sort of way, that it's positive on both counts. He's trying to exercise all options to make him faster before looking in the mirror. And that's what that's what I think he needs to do.
Yeah, and it's a bit of a situation like it was at Ducati, where if Rossi goes slower, it's because he made the wrong decision and got a new crew chief, or because he moved to Ducati. But if Rossi does well, it's because Rossi's this new challenge of a new crew chief has managed to step Rossi up, or in the case of what it would have been at Ducati, Rossi's been able to make the Ducati work. So the Rossi cult of personality, I guess you could say, it's become so strong that it's a no-lose situation for him, so.
And also the bit I liked the best from Jeremy Burgess was just that little phrase in the Valentino and Jeremy press conference on the Friday. Jeremy Burgess turned around and says, "Well, look, history will tell us this time next year whether the adjustment was right or wrong."
Yeah, it's a matter of waiting till then.
Sit back, going, "There you go, boys. History will tell us whether he was right or wrong."
A slightly different voice here, that of Jim Race. We try and keep you people on your toes, and we do quite well. Harry is here with me as well. We'll carry on with what the lads were chatting about. Ian Woodard wrote in. He said, "Hey, all, I see the Austrian circuit, which I believe is owned by the Red Bull organization, is on the F1 calendar for next year. What's happening with it in motorbikes? I would have thought that their Red Bull Rookies Cup and various sponsorships would have been pushing Dorna for a round. He thought it might make for an interesting off-season discussion." And I did a little bit of research, Harry, and I didn't find much on it. This is where we kind of put our feelers out to you folks in Motopod land and see if you can give us some information back so that we can chat about it with more intelligence next time, right?
Yeah, same as you. I tried to look into some things, but I can't really say anything. The only thing I thought that maybe is because they have Sachsenring and especially Bruno already, that they don't want to capitalize ticket sales, but no real like safety reasons or anything that it couldn't run cheaper.
And there are so many races already run in Europe. Moving along, I did not get to hear about the Rossi Burgess bit. So why don't you fill me in on your thoughts and I can throw a couple of things in and then we can move on from that.
Okay, yeah, well, as Dave and I started off with, Rossi and Burgess split company, and it was kind of an unceremonious split. Lots of the usual MotoGP paddock journalists on Twitter were saying that perhaps Rossi didn't handle it in the best way, and Burgess said that when he got called to Rossi's motorhome, he definitely knew he wasn't there to go talk about the Christmas bonus, which I thought was quite funny.
Mm-hmm. The secondary thing, I mean, if you think about it, Rossi's not going to be the one to blab it to the press. And you know that there were a lot of discussions that occurred beforehand, perhaps outside of Jerry's purview as to what the team thought they could do with the different crew chief, right? And they, in order to bring on the gentleman that they did, they had to, you know, have negotiations in place because obviously testing was going to be coming up very quickly. And so somebody leaked it. Odds are that it wasn't Valentino, but he ended up having to do the press work to make it seem as nice as it could. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And the press conference that, that Burgess and Rossi had was pretty awkward, especially from Burgess' part. You can definitely tell that he'd rather be tinkering with bikes than talking to the press. But there was a lot of nice comments and things about Burgess afterwards, especially from Alex Briggs. He posted on his Wrench Racer site a nice little blog that we'll include in the show notes.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, very nice towards Burgess.
Yeah, I actually just read that probably half an hour ago, so that was very cool. Moving along, a whole bunch of more stuff here. You did mention in your, so our notes are a little bit late. Depunier was testing with Paul Bird Motorsports, who looked to be potentially Aprilia's main team. But then since you wrote that, Randy Depunier has now confirmed that for 2014, he will be taking a furlough off of the regular racing circuit and acting as the Suzuki test rider.
Yeah, and that move kind of intrigued me because the hot rumor is at least that both Lowe's and Laverty, who are set to sign, or in Laverty's case, have signed for the Suzuki World Superbike squad. The hot rumor is that that deal comes with a GP contract, so that would look like the two seats for 2015 are already filled up. But who knows? It's racing, and a lot of things can change, especially with contracts.
Yep. We've got Colin Aleish, totally confirmed at NGM Ford. That's good to see. Colin has been off on his own adventures over the last few days.
Yeah, riding a dirt bike in Mexico.
Yeah. Just done with that. Rip through this stuff, Harry, and then we'll see, maybe we'll jump to interviews that you announced before and come back and maybe talk a bit about what is now seems like forever ago, the GP, right?
Yeah, okay, so just the general news. Hiroshi Oyama has confirmed that he'll be riding with the Aspar team alongside Nicky Hayden, and obviously since then he's tested it and everything. And that was known for quite a while and just one of those things that had to wait to be confirmed.
What do you think of, Harry, the performance of the RCB 1000 at the test?
At the test, it maybe wasn't so crash hot. Scott Redding was obviously injured, so that was a bit tough for him. And then Hayden and Oyama had to share a bike because there weren't enough there. So it was a bit dodgy. Even for test times, it did seem to be a bit down, especially on this fabled 0.3 of a second off the proper bike that Stone has done. So I don't know. I think it'll take some time. I think that if they can challenge the Ducatis, then they'll be doing a very decent job. And Hayden will be very happy if he can get past Dovi in a couple of races.
Yep. Well, and I figure they're going to They're going to put that bike together enough to challenge all the other factories with the exception of Factory Haunted.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to build a bike that can beat their own, but...
Yeah. Carry on.
So Jakob Kornfael replaces Maverick Vinales in Team Calvo in Moto3. He brings with him his Redox sponsor, and it was rumoured for a while that Miguel Oliveira might be joining that squad, but Mahindra haven't let him out of his contract. So he is now partnering Arthur Cecis at Mahindra as the Australian moves from the Red Bull team to join the Indian manufacturer. And Anna Carrasco is looking for some sponsorship because at the moment she doesn't have enough money to continue on next year with Team Calvo or any team for that matter, despite some very strong results towards the end of the year. So that's a bit of a shame, and hopefully she can sort that out.
Sure.
Valentino Rossi's Moto3 team, as we knew before, has confirmed Romano Fenati as one of the riders. And then the other rider is Francesco Bagnaia, who was Romano Fenati's teammate this year in the Team Italia squad.
I suspect that Rossi signed Fenati just so he had a blank canvas helmet to have painted up.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll try and convince him to stick a few stickers on there. What else?
Hernandez is confirmed on the open Ducati for the Pramac squad, so that would be kind of interesting.
Yeah, so with Hernandez on that, there's still a couple of teams that, to my knowledge at least, haven't even confirmed their participation next year, especially the CRT / now open category bikes.
Right.
Like, obviously PBM are looking to try and be the main Aprilia squad now that Aspar have jumped ship. But teams like Aventia, Blue Sense, and Iota, I'm not sure on what their plans are for next year. If they'll even... I imagine they'll be competing, but who knows?
Yeah.
Have you heard anything or not really?
Man, if you did, I can't remember. I got so wrapped up in Macau this week.
No worries.
Yeah, it's literally like the TT as far as having to pay attention. But yeah, carry on. There's some interesting BSB news as well.
Yep, so some BSB news that's now a bit old, but Josh Brooks, as had been rumoured for a long time, joins the Milwaukee Yamaha squad alongside Tommy Bridwell. So he's making the jump from Suzuki after, I think it was 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then replacing him, at least for the roads, is William Dunlop, who's signed with the Taiko Suzuki road team. Then, as we mentioned a bit earlier, Eugene Laverty signed with the Crescent Suzuki team in World Superbike. And then Colin Edwards, as we mentioned earlier, has run with his Texas Tornado bootcamp team in the Baja 1000. And the results aren't officially in, but I think at the last time check, they were coming in first. The race is obviously finished, but because of how the race is run, I think it takes a day or two to get time sorted, and no doubt what position they came in, Team Texas Tornado will be out celebrating in full.
I suspect they're already. I'm just trying to picture it, but there's a whole downside of that, which kind of legendary rider named Kurt Caselli, who's done all sorts of off-road adventures, was killed during the race, and there's speculation. Not fully confirmed at this point that may have been influenced by a spectator putting something in the road, creating a jump or something. And it's not unknown at the Baja for people on the course to put things out to make things, in theory, more exciting. But in this particular case, if that was the case, it unfortunately resulted in his death. So a tip of the Motopod hat and condolences to the family and friends of Kurt Caselli. And with that lively note, should we go ahead and run the bits that we did? Does it make sense to do these now, or do you want to just run? Let's just run through MotoGP real quick.
Okay, sure.
The results, I think everybody that listens to this show knows what happened last weekend.
Yeah.
We probably don't even need to do qualifying. Why don't we just run through the results, talk about things there, and then we can head off into the rest of the news.
Okay. So, yeah, obviously last race of the season, Jorge Lorenzo managed to win the race, followed by Danny Pedrosa, Marc Marquez, and then Rossi claimed yet another fourth of the season. It was a bit funny because in the pre-race press conference, that's the order that that Marquez predicted they'd finish. Even though I think when he said that, he was more just joking slash trying to play mind games with Jorge. But anyway.
I don't think that would be... that would probably be a very low odds bet for that first through fourth on Betwin or YouBet, because it's been fairly consistent that way this whole year.
Before the last race, I was looking at different odds for different riders, and in MotoGP for the win, and in Moto3, the odds were terrible for any of the usual top three. It was barely 1-1, but oh well.
Yeah.
But the MotoGP race was pretty good, at least for the first couple of laps.
My prediction did come true, did it not?
Yeah. He did say Jorge would try to slow them down, and he did. But unfortunately for him, Bautista was ahead of Rossi, and there was no way Bautista was going to try and overtake Marquez. So Jorge eventually.
But the thing that you and I think Dave were also worried about was that, and Martin as well, was that if he pulled that strategy, then perhaps Danny Ormark would pull in front of Jorge and clear up, which didn't happen. I mean, it was kind of a canny game in a way.
Yeah, it was pretty clear that Jorge was definitely slowing them down, because anytime Pedrosa or Marquez did get ahead of him, he was able to take it straight back within a corner or two. So
that was some of the most aggressive riding by Danny that we've seen all season.
Yeah, he had a couple of big moments, mostly caused by Jorge bashing into the side of him. But but yeah, the first 10 laps of that race were really, really good. And then, obviously, Jorge broke away, and it became like every MotoGP race for the last 3 years.
Yeah, there was a great line. I unfortunately didn't ask this question, which you'll hear in the interview shortly, when Marc Marquez was asked about the race and what he thought of the battle going on in front of him. I don't know if you remember that from already doing the editing, but it was brilliant. You guys will hear that in a bit.
Yep. So obviously, with Marquez coming in third, he became the youngest ever MotoGP champion and the first rookie champion since King Kenny.
Mm-hmm.
And that was obviously very impressive.
He set like 20 records.
Yeah. Honda had a whole separate press release just for special records he'd set.
Yeah.
The kid's special.
Yeah, well, I like that. You're calling him a kid.
Yeah,
kid.
Well, he's what? I think he's 6 months older than me, and he's managed to be three-time world champion. I can barely tie my shoes.
Yeah, well, you'll get there. You'll get there. All right, so it was cool. Yeah. I was pleased. It was a fitting ending to the season, and it bode well for the future is probably the best way I can put it.
Yeah, I mean, the next couple of years look to be really, really good. With Jorge and Mark, they're definitely going to continue battling, obviously. And then there's a lot of talent coming in from Moto2 and Moto3. I mean, Espargaro in testing was right on the pace already, so it'll be good to see him eventually.
I think that one of the things that I'm actually looking forward to, and I should say this with some trepidation because I thought the same thing as we've gone through the various rule changes, from two-stroke to 990s to 800s, back to 1000s, is kind of seeing what shakes out as these new open bikes come in, what shakes out as far as teams coming back into the fold or new teams coming into the fold. And to be honest, for us, it's fun stuff to speculate about anyway. So it could be kind of cool, yeah, especially with the riders coming up.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jorge is still going to have a very tough job next year, even if Yamaha do step it up, because Mark will have that much more experience and he'll just be even harder to beat.
Yeah, no doubt. Moving on.
To Moto2, which was a little boring, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Espargaro had made a charge from the front, but then he crashed. And then after that, it was pretty spread out. Tirol ended up winning the race by 4 seconds. Then his teammate was behind him. And then behind Torres was Zarco and Corse, who actually had quite a good battle to the line. that ended up in a photo finish. But otherwise, it was one of the most boring Moto 2 races I've seen in a long, long time because it was so spread out, which is pretty unusual for Moto 2 at least.
Well, on top of that, we're at Valencia with the title not to be found for that class, and so it's hard. It's hard to garner interest in that, especially when the one guy that probably could have created something of, you know, something exciting. Well, okay, so let's say Paul had finished and Scott Redding was still healthy. That could have been an interesting finish if the title had been decided. But those two things did not occur. And so we move on from that to Moto 3.
Yeah.
How do you like that for a skim?
Yeah, the Moto 3 race was easily the best race I've seen since Estoril 2006 in terms of just drama and how exciting it was to the end. I mean, everyone was hyping it up so much. And I was a bit worried that it might fall a bit flat on its face, but to me at least it lived up to all the expectations. And yeah, I don't know about you, but I loved that race.
I need to go back and watch it again because I remember how good it was. I don't remember everything that happened. I wisely rewatched MotoGP to try and make sure that I had my head wrapped around it. But Moto 3, the only thing that sits in the back of my mind was that it was a brilliant race.
Yeah, I mean, it came down to the last corner, as everyone said it would, between Vinales and Rins.
Yep.
Because Salom had unfortunately crashed out earlier in the race, and it was a weird crash for Salom as well. It wasn't too tough a corner. He just seemed to lose the front. But yeah, it came down to Vinales and Rins. They were battling all through the last three laps, swapping places every corner. And then Rins made a move, tried to push Vinales wide, and then Vinales just cut up the inside of him and got much better drive. And Rins eventually got knocked to third as Folger was able to take advantage of Rins running wide because of the line he'd taken.
By one one-thousandth of a second.
Yeah, it was close, and the person I thought least likely to win the championship ended up winning it.
Yeah. Yeah, seriously. I mean, looking back on that, and I am going to watch it again. That might be a great postseason one to dissect in more detail. Moto 3 this year, I would have to say, has provided some of the most spectacular racing. I mean, much like the 125 class did for years and years, but always so tight. This was a great way to, frankly, end out the championship.
Yeah, and this championship kind of showed the importance of consistency. Both Rins and Salom had crashes, whereas Vinales, who might not have won since Le Mans, he finished every race within the top five. Or at least the vast majority of them within the top five. And it's because of that he was able to stay in the title fight and then manage to get it.
Yeah. Well, on the other hand, MotoGP actually showed the value of consistency as well, because Jorge came out with two more wins than Marquez, he still lost the title.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah. Yeah, we shall have to see. A great finish by Anya Carrasco in eighth, as you well noted. Somebody needs to definitely pick her up.
She definitely made, towards the end of the season, you could tell that she'd learned a lot throughout the season. And I mean, that's all you can expect from a rookie rider.
Yeah. And the last crasher out was Jack Miller. Now, why do I note that? Because Jack finished off the testing in, was it at Valencia or was it at Aragon?
No, it was at Jerez, their test.
Or Jerez. Yeah, I'm sorry. And he finished out on top, like dominating.
Yeah, he's definitely adapted to that KTM very quickly.
Yep. So good on him. Let's see, you want to talk about testing real quick? Let's talk about testing real quick, and then we'll run the interviews, which includes Marquez talking about post-testing, and then we'll come back and we'll see if we can't wrap this thing up with some semblance of something.
Okay, so yeah, testing. Marquez and Pedroza skipped the first day of testing because they were apparently quite hungover.
Yeah, well, so did Valentino Rossi for the first half of the first day, which is normal.
Yeah. No, but what I was really impressed with was everyone was saying that Jorge had been out till about 4 a.m. the night before, and then he was the first one out and did almost the most laps on that first day. That guy is a machine.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been to enough post-GP parties at this point to wonder how anybody can be that functional at 9 o'clock in the morning. But then again, I'm not 30 years old anymore, or 19 for that matter, mister.
Yeah. But yeah, on the first day, it was Jorge and Rossi dominated. Then it was Bradle. Then Iannone actually made a surprise debut as the top Ducati.
Yep.
And then Crutchlow began to adapt to the Ducati project. And a lot like Dovi last year, he said, "It's not as bad as I thought it would be."
That was day one, right?
Yeah, that was day one. So those words maybe came back to bite him a bit in day two as he struggled a bit more with the Ducati and realized that, yeah, that front end, maybe not so good. But what I was really, really surprised about was Mike Demeglio was testing the FTR Kawasaki in testing. That came out of absolutely nowhere. And that, yeah, that really shocked me, at least.
It did. One thing I want to point out about Cal, so that it doesn't seem like we're giving him too much stick. He said, even before the testing was to occur, that he wasn't going for lap times on the Ducati because the bike wasn't going to be the same when they came around to testing it at Sepang come February. So he was basically just kind of betting himself in, which is a wise thing to say. And so I'm not really that concerned about his lap times yet. Frankly, we have to see what GG can come up with for that team. One bit of note, which was kind of interesting, is that I didn't include in the show notes, Harry. And we'll step away from testing here for a moment. Is Ducati put out a press release that I read yesterday, I think, that they are taking the World Superbike effort back in-house, also to be lorded over by GG. So it sounds like they're trying to pull things together, which I think is an encouraging sign. They have to, right?
Yeah, GG said that his first main aim was helping the communication chain between track and factory for both superbikes and GP.
Yeah.
And he, like everyone else before him, had said that it's definitely going to be a two-year project and that next year's about stepping it up that much, and then year two will be about winning and pushing for podiums and all that.
You know, I've heard that two-year project thing, and every time I hear it, it kind of just gives me chills. We've heard that from them before. But let's see what they can pull together. In our complete hashing of MotoGP and testing, and I blame that primarily on me, Harry, not you, why don't we take the time to listen to a pair of chats that we had. The first one we'll run is Mark Marquez, put together by Paul Kelly at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. It was a group of journalists, myself included. You guys will hear my dulcet tones with four questions or so, and a group of other journalists from around the world. So let's go ahead and roll that. And secondarily, I had a great chat with Jeremy Toy, a longtime AMA road racer, as well as Isle of Man TT and Macau. And you can hear his thoughts on Macau. And then we'll come back and talk about what the results were from there. What do you think?
Yep, sounds good to me.
All right, roll into it, man.
Welcome to the Red Bull Indianapolis GP teleconference. My name is Johan, and I'll be your operator for today's call. At this time, all participants are in a listen mode only. Later, we'll conduct a question-and-answer session. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I would now like to turn the call over to Paul Kelly. Mr. Kelly, you may begin.
Thank you, Johan, and welcome everyone to the Red Bull Indianapolis GP teleconference. We are very grateful and privileged today to have the new MotoGP world champion, Mark Marquez of the Repsol Honda team. Mark won the title by finishing third Sunday at the Grand Prix of Valencia, edging Jorge Lorenzo by 4 points. I could spend the next 15 minutes reading off a list of Mark's accomplishments, but I'll try and keep it brief because I know you all want to talk with him. But a little bit of background. Mark is 20 years old. He's from Spain. He's the youngest Premier Class world champion in history. He is the first rookie to win the Premier Class world title since American legend Kenny Roberts in 1978. Mark won 6 races this season, a rookie record. One of those wins came in August at the Red Bull Indianapolis GP at IMS, and he finished on the podium in 16 of his 18 starts this year. Mark has won 3 world championships in the last 4 seasons. He won the 125cc title in 2010, the Moto2 title in 2012, and the MotoGP World Championship in 2013. And, oh, by the way, he also led testing today. As 2014 is already underway, he led testing today at Valencia. Mark, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Mark, I know you had there was a lot of anticipation about your arrival this year in MotoGP, and you have the championship pedigree. You won the title in 2010. You won the title in 2012. But in hindsight, when you first got on the bike for the first race at Qatar, was winning the world championship your ultimate goal for the season? Is this what you planned on, or was this a surprise?
No, I didn't expect that. No, the plan, my goal was try to learn on the category, but also, you know, always I have the mentality to try to fight for some podium, for some victory, but I didn't expect to be constant there in the top and fight for the championship and get it in the end. That was a great surprise, because I expect that in the first race I struggled a little bit more and try to be strong in the second part of the season. But from the beginning I felt quite good with the bike, and that was the most important.
Okay. Johan, let's open it up for questions. Before you do, I'd like to remind the media members here that we'd like to limit each round of questioning for each journalist to one question and one follow-up. If time permits, we'll certainly come back to you for subsequent rounds. But again, just a reminder, one question with one follow-up for each round with Mark. Johan, go ahead and open up the call, please.
Okay, we have Jim Race with Motopod online with a question. Please go ahead.
Hey, Mark, first off, congratulations on your elbow save in turn 6 this morning. Well done.
Thank you.
I kind of wonder, do you feel like getting access to the factory Honda squad as a rookie was the difference that allowed you to be world champion out of the box? Or do you think you might have done as well at, say, LCR or Gresini?
This is difficult to say, because you don't know I didn't test that bike, and I don't know how is the level, but what I heard that the level of the brothers' bikes is same than the our ones. Bautista, that is true that the new improvements arrive a little bit later, but of course that to be here in Honda in the factory team helps me quite a lot.
Well, we all know the RCV 213 is a great bike. Is there anything that you can think of that would make it better? Is there anything that you still want besides more power, which is obvious?
Yeah, sure. We can improve many, many things, especially mid corner. Then also edge grip in the mid corner too. We can improve exit the corner also. Traction, we can improve stability too a little bit, but the package was quite good, and I feel good on the bike.
Cool, thank you, and congratulations, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we have Phil Thomas online with Totally Racing. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mark. Indianapolis has redone the road course. Have you seen it yet?
Sorry, can you repeat, please?
Indianapolis, IMS, has redone their road course for 2014. Have you seen it yet?
Yeah, I heard that Indianapolis will be removed the tarmac and also change some corners. Sure, to change the corners, I'm not agree, because if one circuit is like that, we need to keep it. And also was a nice circuit, one different circuit. But anyway, to remove the asphalt, also every rider was pushing. For me, it was okay, because it was great to slide like that to get feeling on the bike like this track. But anyway, that is we will need to act in that.
Well, congratulations on your title and good luck in 2014.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we have Ron Liebeck with Ultimate Motorcycle. Please go ahead.
Hey, Mark. First, congrats on the championship and leading today's practice session. We're just wondering, you filled a pretty big vacancy that was left by Stoner, obviously, on the RC213B. But you already answered your initial goals when joining the team about what you were looking forward to in 2013 MotoGP. But when did you first realize you actually had a shot at the title?
When you realize, sorry?
Yeah, when did you realize you could actually obtain the title?
Maybe I start to realize a little bit after Brno is when I start to realize, also then on Silverstone, even I had danger, but I start to realize on that races, because Dani and Jorge were at 100% and I was able to fight with them and to win that races.
Oh, excellent. And who do you see as your biggest threat in 2014? And also, what riders do you see coming up through the ranks, like your brother Alex in Moto3? Who do you think is going to have a big opportunity in the future?
Yeah, in 2014 will be interesting because it changed a little bit the regulation, the rules, and that will be important to adapt the bike to that rule. But anyway, I think Jorge will be strong, Dani will be strong. We will see also Spargaró. I think he can do a good job. We'll see if he can stay there every race. But yeah, it's coming, the young talent. And from Moto3 especially, and yeah, I think my brother next year, maybe he will have the first chance to fight for a championship, but of course he needs more experience, but anyway, his season, he did a very good job.
All right. Excellent. And good luck in 2014.
Thank you.
Okay, we have Jensen Beeler on the line with Asphalt and Rubber. Please go ahead.
Hi, Mark. I was wondering what your thoughts were during the race, watching Jorge and Danny battle at the front, especially after Jorge's comments this season about your aggressive riding.
Yeah, you know, I watched that battle, and you know, it's what I say already in the past. We are here for racing. We are here for fight for the other riders, always inside the limit. But Jorge all the year complained about me, complained about that I'm an aggressive rider, and here he did some movements a little bit same or even stronger than my one. But anyway, for me, I was agree, because I think here we are for racing, and he was fighting for a title, and then he tried to stop the race, and for that reason he did that movement and that action.
I know Race Direction had a conversation with Jorge after the race. Do you think it would be better or worse for MotoGP to continue with thoughts on hard battles like that?
I think for the show, they need to be a little bit open, you know, open mind, and try to, for example, here in Valencia was a special situation for Jorge, because he was fighting for a championship. He tried to stop the race. Also in Jerez was a special situation because it was last lap, last corner. So they need to be a little bit open, but anyway, always inside some limit. But that, I think, for me, was okay.
Great. Thank you. Congratulations on your championship.
Thank you.
Okay, we have Larry Lawrence with Cycle News. Please go ahead.
Hi, Mark. You know, your trademark this year was being very aggressive and always pushing to the limit. Even in practices, you had crashes. Finally, maybe in the last race, you were a little more cautious, than previous. But how do you think you will race that way next year? Will you continue to be aggressive even in practice, or do you think you learned something from this year and maybe will try to be more cautious at times?
Yeah, sure, I will have more experience on the category and I will try to have less crashes too. But it's what I say. If I want to find the limit, I need to find on the on the practice, because then on the race, try to know where is the limit. But anyway, yeah, I will try to improve that aspect, try to be a little bit, not smoother, because in the end it's my riding style, but a little bit more constant on the lines, and with experience of this year, try to use it and try to have less crashes.
And then a follow-up, many people were surprised when you were penalized for colliding with Pedrosa at Aragon. Do you personally think that racing officials are involving themselves too much in what's going on in the track? Does it take away from the racing?
Yeah, for sure I was disappointed about that action, because it was so unlucky for Jorge, but I think it was a race incident. But anyway, of course, I was completely disagree with that point of penalty, because was no mean, but anyway, we are here, have a race direction, and we must respect the decision of them.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, we have Michael Guggs with Road Racing World. Please go ahead.
Hi, Michael Guggs with Road Racing World. Congratulations, Mark.
Hi, thank you.
Thank you. My question is this: I don't think your competitors expected you to be quite as competitive and as fast as you were in 2013. For next season, have you lost the element of surprise? Do they know what's coming for next year now? And do you expect to see more challenges on the track from your competitors than you saw, especially at the beginning of this year?
Yeah, sure. This year, no, I think nobody expect that, and I didn't expect that results and to be competitive from the beginning. But anyway, next year everybody will be looking me, and you know, the pressure will be higher, so will be more difficult. But for sure, Jorge, Dani, they will control me, but like I control them. But anyway, yeah, this year was a great surprise to be there from the beginning, and I think was a surprise for everybody.
Excellent. And a quick follow-up question. If I think you touched on this a little bit, I'd like you to expand on a little bit more, though. The weak part of the 213 seems to be mid-corner edge grip. Is that what you said, and that's the area that you want to work on the most for 2014?
Yeah. I already tried the proto bike today, and we improved a little bit on that point. But then have some negative points too. But anyway, mid-corner HD, we improved a little bit. But, you know, today just we test the bike, and tomorrow we will try to concentrate to find a good setup, and then we will see really how is the potential of this bike. But yeah, today was pretty good, the test. We get a lot of information, and that will be important for the winter time, because then Honda can work on new, I don't know, new chassis, new swim arm, or something new.
Thank you.
Okay, we have Peter Ines, a private investor. Please go ahead.
Hi there, Mark. You have had this amazing calm all year under intense pressure. And I know that your father emphasized the importance of calmness to you as you were growing up, but do you have any specific mental techniques that you use to clear your mind before you go out and race? I don't know, things like visualization, meditation, anything like that?
No. Always my mentality or the... Before to go on the race, to go on the bike, I like to be alone here on the motorhome and change alone. And if I speak with somebody, I speak with Emilio, Zamora, my manager. But I like it to be here alone and quiet.
Thank you. And a quick follow-up is, in what ways did your recovery when you were out with your eye injury, in what ways, you've spoken about how that increased your mental strength a bit. Could you expand a bit more on in what ways that helped you?
Yeah, it was the most difficult part of my career. the most difficult month because, you know, I was injured that the doctor say that we don't know if you will ride again the bike. And then when I feel recovery, I say, bah, we need to enjoy that because you never know what will happen in the future. So that changed a little bit my mentality, that enjoyed every moment and enjoyed the races and enjoyed what we are doing.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mark, this is Paul Kelly. I'll ask a quick question of you while we wait for other people to come into the queue. You're 20 years old. You're the world champion. How do you expect your life to change, and how are you trying to stay grounded? I mean, you're the best rider in the world. You're in your first year in the category, years old, you're a superstar. How do you stay the same? How do you not let it go to your head?
Yeah, you know, that of course it's difficult, but you know, I try to be the same guy, the same Mark, and that you know, all my people, my family, my team, I already say to them that if I change a little bit, flying a little bit, they can hit me or say, hey Mark, you are not in the correct way. And that is good, no? That the people around you also have that confidence to say to you that you need to be with the foot on the on the ground.
Yes, we have a question from Jim Race from Motopod. Please go ahead.
Hey, Mark. I got a question here, and it's kind of might be a little touchy. But what really happened at Phillip Island? Did you miscount laps? Was the pit board wrong, or did the team think that they could run 11 laps without penalty?
That was a, you know, was a big confusion, was a mistake, human mistake, and yeah, was a big mistake, but anyway, the team did a big confusion with the laps, and they thought that was possible to go in on the lap. But when they show to me box, I come in. But yeah, it was a big, the only what I can say is that it was a big mistake from the team. But will be a great experience for the future.
And I'm sure that probably worried you just a little bit, even though your points lead was good. If you had not won the championship this year and finished, say, second or third, would you still look upon 2013 as a success?
Yeah, of course. I already say on Tuesday here in Valencia on Thursday, I say that for me that season was much better than what I expect, and to win the race, if we win the title, if we finish second. Anyway, it will be a great season because a rookie season always is difficult, and to finish second also was a great result.
Yep. All right, cool.
Okay, we have Michael with Road Racing World. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Mark, you spent your career coming up through the ranks with Monlau. Pardon me if I'm mispronouncing that. How different was it to jump into the HRC team and all of a sudden have different technicians, different support group? How hard was it for you to adapt to working with them? Or were you able to simply say, you know, holy crap, these people win the Constructors' Championship year after year. I better listen to what they have to say.
Yeah, you know, it's difficult when you did that step because, you change the category, you change the bike, and everything, but also you come in a factory team. And in the beginning, you know, you feel a lot of responsibility because it's many people inside. All what you say, they will write, and you need to be careful what you say because if you say to them wrong information, maybe then they will be a little bit crazy, you know, to try to improve that problem, and was not true. But yeah, it's difficult, but when you get the experience, then it's much better because it's a factory. Around you are in the factory, and if you have something on the bike, they will try to do his best.
Excellent. For 2014, with the bike having a little bit less fuel, do you anticipate having to change your riding or what you do any differently?
We will see. First, we have 2 points. Try to be more consistent on the lines. Try to be a little bit smoother, but especially more consistently and on the lines. And then also try to improve the starts. That is 2 points that this year I lose a little bit.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Okay, we have Larry Lawrence with Cycle News on the line with a question.
Mark, I understand your eye injury was quite serious, a detached retina, if I'm correct, and I know that's a serious injury, and many people have a difficult time recovering from that. How is your vision today, and do you still have some effects from that, or do you see worse out of the eye that was injured?
No, the vision, I was so lucky on that time because already the doctor said to me, maybe we will get operation, but maybe the vision will be not 100% perfect, will be good for a normal life, but for ride the bike, for make something special, will be not perfect, but I was so lucky, and now it's 100% perfect. I'm very, 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 very proud of my doctor, because he did a very good job, and he gave me again the opportunity to ride a bike.
Did they do a laser reattachment? Did they use a bubble? How did they reattach your retina?
What do you mean about the operation?
Yeah, how did they reattach it?
Honestly, I don't know. I know that they touch something inside the eye. Like some not nervous but some tendon, and then maybe I don't know exactly, but I know that they touched on some tendon.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
And with that, we will wrap up today's call. Mark, thanks so much for joining us. Good luck tomorrow at Valencia. Congratulations on your title, and we are all looking forward to seeing you next August back at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway to defend your title at the Red Bull Indianapolis GP. Thanks again, Mark.
Thank you very much.
Jim Race here for Motopod with Jeremy Toy, the third American that is racing at Macau GP this year, a returning veteran. Spent some time there, what, in 2005, 2006, somewhere around that range?
Yeah, actually the first year I went over was 2003 with me and Jeff May and Jason Perez, I think.
So that's kind of old school in a way.
Oh yeah, that's definitely old school. Bikes were archaic back then.
and in a way, and you've seen the change over the last 10 years, Macau has changed quite a bit, hasn't it?
Yeah, for sure. When we first came over, I mean, not to say it wasn't serious business, but it was a different mentality. You know, there was a couple of front running guys taking it pretty serious. And then there was a bunch of guys that were here and very qualified to race, but it was maybe not as, you know, it wasn't enough guys pushing to the front. And in the last, probably, I'd say 5 years, the mentality of this place has changed. It's got a lot more exposure, and you know, on the average, you got top 10 guys that are like their goal is going to the front.
Yeah, and on top of that, you see these lads bringing over kit that you don't see anywhere else in the world because it's pretty much a run what you brung series.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if I could find one of those Acme jets from Roadrunner and strap it down, we'd drive one of those too because we'd be faster.
No kidding. In a way, sort of the party atmosphere of it has boiled off a bit. Not completely, mind you.
Yeah.
I know that. But it's become a fair more serious. You are racing the S1000 RR this year, is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Is that built out of your own shop? That would be Lee's Cycles down in San Diego, California?
No, this is, there's been some changes, some dramatic changes in the last 2 years. And that was pretty much the reason I didn't come last year, was the organizing. So I'm actually riding the BMW that is prepared by the Pinscoffer team, which is a factory backed, you know, good quality pieces on it, good quality team. But it was a little easier, or I'm hoping smarter, for me to come and get on a good quality bike I know I could have a good finish on without having to organize my own stuff across, because it's the Chinese government taking care of all of it, as opposed to when I started with a British-based company, which is Panels MotoGP, that was bringing everything over.
Yep. So Rico Pens puts together quite a good bike, and he's a mate of a couple of the friends that I know over there as well. It's a bike that you can probably do pretty damn well on.
I would have to say it's definitely a bike. Kind of chuck out the probably a while ago. You know, I plan on putting this thing definitely towards the front. You know, I've had good, not only here, but I've had good luck on the BMW chassis before. It's something I know, very familiar with it. And the motor basically came right out of Melandri's bike. So it's not going to be a slouch. And, you know, it's a good little piece of the puzzle to have at a place like this.
Is Marco kind of pissed off about that?
Well, I don't think he's that pissed off, because I tried to get his girlfriend first. He wouldn't give that up, so at least we got his motor.
Well done. Well done, sir. Your time at Macau, unfortunately, I don't have it in the back of my head, but your finishes there, how well have you done in the past?
It's been sprinkled around, especially at the start. You know, I don't call myself very smart, but I was smart enough to take it easy those first couple of years and, you know, get a good finish and start to understand the track. And then the last 5 years, I've really pushed, you know, but I've ended up getting fourths and then finally podium in 2010 on the BMW. So between me and Miller was on the podium in 2000, and then I returned to the podium for, you know, America 10 years later. So it was a little anniversary podium there.
Yep. And he's a character to hang around with, isn't
he? Yeah, that's not what I call him, but he can call him that.
we call him plenty of things. You know, it was interesting, because I was talking with Brandon Cretu, who's the other American that is there this week. And the circuit, and I know that you've raced at the Isle of Man on the TT course, which is similar in some ways, but not, because everything at the Macau circuit is blind corners. You can't see shit through any of the corners.
No, there's way too many barriers and everything else in the way. The rest of frickin' Macau is in the way of the turns, basically. You can't see shit. But yeah, TT is, you know, you can call both these street races, but they couldn't be more different of a type of design of the race.
And you can't approach them in any way similar, specifically because you guys end up riding on a street circuit, even though it's a little bit the same as the TT, but that spends the first half of the day getting oiled down by diesel trucks doing delivery, because it's a tiny friggin' island.
Yeah, no, and the course is the smack dab center of the actual town, and then it winds up through the hill a little bit and comes back down. But complete street circuit, and basically the only thing they change, obviously they put barriers up, but the only thing they change for us is they go across and they burn most of the, and hopefully all of the turn paint and lines and shit like that off. So it's pretty amazing, to be honest, because you think, this is a street circuit, and, you know, if I was coming out of my house, I'm not going to, send it into the first turn, because you know how shitty the roads are. This place surprisingly has a good amount of grip for being used, you know, all year long.
So when you look at the circuit, and there's a couple of corners that I think about, but what are the one or two that probably kind of grip you and make you pucker up?
Well, I mean, obviously the Mandarin Bin, which is what, if they're going to count them off, would be around turn two. It's basically you've got your front straightaway, you've got a high speed, maybe not quite 90-degree, it's pretty wide open, turn, which would be turn one, and then you get all the way up into fifth gear, and if you've got the sack, you hold it on through this bend. And, you know, the last couple of years, obviously, you know, you always hear those, your quality instructors, your, you know, Schwantzes and, you know, Spencers and Pridmores and the guys that do good school, you always hear that thing in the back of your mind, you know, go fast in the fast stuff, slow in the slow stuff. So right. I've always focused this first sector, which is, I'm bad with numbers. I could tell you off of data, but let's just say you're hauling ass through this turn and same thing, barriers and everything. And it's one that I really focus on. And luckily, to my credit, I actually have the fastest first sector time of anyone around the track.
No shit. Really?
Yeah.
Well done. wow. Okay. I colored me impressed. Is there a certain point at Macau that you kind of, the barriers start getting a little bit transparent because you already know? If you've spent enough time there, you kind of already know which way the track goes, that you're looking through the corner, but you don't actually see the barrier. You just see your exit point.
Yeah, there's no doubt. In the top, even it's funny, in the top section where it's substantially narrower and, you know, you're winding through the side of the hill and all this barrier and stuff, it's funny, even though it's a street, it gets a good flow going, and it becomes, instead of dodging these barriers, you get a rhythm, you know, a left or a right, you know, a nice throttle pace. And it's funny. It does become a little transparent, as fucking dumb as that should be. But, you know, I guess you're there enough and, you know, you trust your muscle memory.
Yeah. All right. So let me drag you all the way back to the U.S. You have kind of a pretty cool litany in the AMA. As well as racing in local clubs, not only mine, but the AFM. In fact, I think you won the AFM closer, did you not, this year?
No. I ended up not going. I won the one before the end. We ended up not going to the last one. I actually was I was sitting inside of, I wasn't in the hospital, but I was just freshly out of the hospital and didn't make it.
Okay. Don't do that. And you also have a pretty damn good record around, one of the most fearsome tracks in the U.S., that being Willow Springs.
Yeah. You know, I've whatever you want to call it. I was definitely born there and, spent some, a good amount of time, and then, not that I have any hate for the track, but that track is known to groom and maybe not groom, but produce a type of rider that can only go fast at that track. And it's, you know, it's pretty well known around. But, you know, when AFM or even your AMA comes in, the locals at Willow, they can hold their own, you know, so pretty quick. One of my biggest things, after I got, you know, what I thought was pretty good there, I wanted to get out. I wanted to go do something else. I wanted to make sure I didn't get stuck in that title. And, you know, hopefully I've succeeded.
Well, I mean, you set enough lap records along your way. I was fairly impressed following over the years and seeing you do that. You have a motorcycle shop down in San Diego that not only supports your racing but supports a fair amount of other racers.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it all kind of stays in this little retarded circle of mine of, you know, not only loving riding and racing, but especially in the last couple of years, I've just really got into the attention on how making every bit of the bike faster. You know, obviously, I got in to the shop, it was already kind of a turnkey by Lee Shirts, and then bought it. God, I mean, this is getting gnarly, but bought it 15 years ago. So we've been doing it for a while, and if it wasn't for the shop and slash the racing going hand in hand, shit, we'd be another place that, you know, you go in there, you change your oil, you know, and maybe the wheels and brakes don't fall off, but that's what you get. But with us always pushing and being able to kind of, you know, be at the front of a lot of the current technology, it just keeps your interest in it, and it's fun.
Well, I mean, it, not only do you get, you have the opportunity to, I mean, any racer, of course, wants to have his own shop. It's nice to have one that's fully kitted. Are you doing CNC stuff down there at all or anything like that?
What's that?
Are you building a lot of your own parts? Are you getting into the manufacturing business?
Well, yeah, and that in the last couple of years, I've definitely gotten into the manufacturing business. We are not equipped. We don't have a CNC at the shop, but in the last, since we've been riding the CBRs, you know, I'm kind of known by the magazines and a lot of the teams to being kind of freaking ultra sensitive, almost like a fucking princess. And we've been able to use this sensitivity to build suspension links, you know, and just study that. And it's pretty cool. You know, I've been able to build a very popular rear link for the CBR 1000 that we sold hundreds and hundreds of those. And it's a very simple bolt-on piece. And then we built a more complex one for the BMW because the chassis is, needs a little bit more, and then we just did one for the ZX10, which I'm currently riding, which the bike is unrideable without a link, and just stuff like that. We've done a lot of CBR parts, glossy stacks. We've made our own pistons, obviously designed our own pistons, not produced, not made them per se. But yeah, it's one of those where, you know, it's you kind of get at it and find out what part of the bike sucks, which is very hard nowadays because the bike's just so good, and keep it going.
It's a bit of a quandary these days. At what point do the bikes eclipse themselves? You know, there's a lot of people that talk about why don't we have, you know, a new Gixxer? Why don't we have a real new Honda? Even this sort of pseudo thing they're coming out with next year.
Yeah.
But they're so damn good. I mean, how do you eclipse what you've got on a street bike that's total overkill for your average street guy?
Yeah, well, and that's where it is. They're overkill with what the capability of the bike is. Now, what people don't understand is, you know, on the average, your average bike is set up for, say, you know, usually around 155 to 160 pound guy. Most of the stuff now, you know, is tailoring that bike to be more comfortable for its rider and its rider's needs. And, you know, most people just think, it comes from the factory. These guys are smarter than me. I'm just going to put my helmet on and throw the leg over and it's perfect for me. Which, you know, if you're going to drive to 7-Eleven or Starbucks, you're probably pretty right. But, you know, if you plan on chucking this thing into a turn and it not fussing about it, you know, there's a lot of suspension setup can be done. You know, the motors, you know, you can make anything faster. I had a freaking hellaciously fast big wheel when I was young, but that's, you know, it's really not needed, you know, for the most part. You know, you go up to do your track days and stuff, and there's some bikes that, you know, specific attention to motor does benefit, but nowadays, it's really about the handling because the bikes are so damn good.
Yeah, I ported my big wheel when I think I was 7.
Probably saw each other heads up on the curb or something.
Oh yeah, no, it was seriously badass. Back to Macau. You've been coming here for a while. It is even though it has kind of shed a bit of its party zone atmosphere. When you hang out, I know that you got drug over to Hong Kong. I've got enough sources where I hear about
Fucking Miller. Yeah. Go ahead.
And then I heard you had some football guys that you had to chase off because they were kind of interfering with the MotoGP watching.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm pretty mellow when it comes down to it, but if somebody wants to freaking get loud and get in the way of me watching Marquez get freaking sideways, you know, that'll freaking rub me wrong quick. But you're in a different, it's funny, when you leave the States and pretty much go to any country, they welcome motorcycles with open arms. I mean, right. You know, TT is probably, you know, the biggest, you know, the only time we get to see this in the States, you know, is when you go to, say, Laguna. There's your, you know, your biggest thing. Usually, even when we're over here, it's pretty massive. These people love the bikes and everything else. But maybe the bars that we pick that have footballs all over the side of the freaking place and everything else wasn't the smartest. So, yeah, got a little loud with, you know, people. But I don't know. I think they were a little scared of getting kicked in the shin. That seems to be a problem with them. So they let us watch a bike race.
There's no doubt that not only the shenanigans during midweek or mid fortnight, if you will, can be a little bit entertaining and often hard to garner out of a racer, but the post race antics can be quite. I take it you've gone on to the mainland at a point or two.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, we've done a little bit of everything here. I mean, it's pretty cool. You got everything. You know, it's getting maybe. I don't want to say it's not as fun now because it really has become quite westernized. You know, it's just a Vegas with a different accent. But there's a little bit of everything here, from the money to, you know, when we come, the idiot racers doing all kinds of stupid stuff, and that goes on and on. But it's just a good time, no matter what category you want to check out.
Okay. In your opinion, and you alluded to this before, the departure of Mike Trimby, how did that change that for you?
Yeah, it's just one of those that, when I came over with Henry DeGaulle and Trimby, was the main guy in charge. I just appreciated what he was doing, and he actually did it, you know, almost like it was his hobby, his baby, and had been doing it for so many years. And every year we came over, we were treated so good, and just everything was taken care of. So, I mean, got a lot of respect for the guy. And then when the whole bomb blew up, which was the Chinese government accusing Mike of not being truthful in some deals, you know, Mike just said, that's it, fucking done with you guys. And like, he broke off a 20, you know, almost 30 year marriage with a snap of his fingers. You got to respect somebody that's that can do something like that. So the next year I kind of, you know, threw up my little flag and said, no, I'm not doing this one because Mike's not freaking handling it. So, you know, hope your race is decent. And it still went on, you know, it's still going on now. The organization, you know, they're trying, it's something different. Everybody has their little fallouts, but, you know, I had to definitely, give one for the respect of, Trimby's bringing me over all this time.
Yeah. Would you class, I mean, the TT is one that, for American fans that don't quite get it, but they should. The TT is one that everybody should absolutely go to. But I think that I would also put Macau on that same bucket list.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, how cool is that place for somebody to come to and just to imagine the experience and enjoy the experience of something that is so alien?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you have to take both of them in, and both of them are as intense in their own way. You know, you can't even compare. I don't even know where to start. I mean, Macau is its own fucking type of gnarly. TT is its own type of gnarly. I was lucky enough to go over to Northwest. It's its own type, and you know, to classify, it's impossible. It's just one of those things that you have to, you know, get in and understand, or not even understand, but appreciate the speed through the place to really get what you're looking at.
Yep. So weather-wise, it looks like I've looked a long-term-ish, which is always kind of sketchy, but it looks like you guys may have some good weather, which is a good sign.
Yeah, no, believe me, I am definitely crossing fingers on that. You know, I came over that last time in 11 on the Paul Bird bike and went out morning practice, was, you know, P1 for most of the practice, and then rudder put it on top, and then that was it. 4 days we sat around the rain, and there is nothing worse than getting started and then stopping and waiting. I mean, it pretty much shot the whole weekend to hell, you know, as far as bike setup and just mentality. So this looks like we'll be able to, you know, get our green light and, you know, go hard until the end.
Cool. Looking forward to the rest of this week, which is when you guys get serious after all the bullshit PR stuff that you have to do, which in a way is fun, I suppose.
Right.
What do you think you have in the Rico Fenskoffer S1000RR? What are your plans and what are your goals for the week?
Obviously, the goals are pretty high. You know, I'm coming over on what I know is a very good motorcycle. Also, being able to run the Pirelli tires that I've been backed on for the last couple of years. This combination is going to be good. You know, these combinations are definitely worth being in the front, if not the front of the whole thing. We'll just have to see how I get along with the team, which has been really good the last couple of days. But it is always, you know, obviously, second language, new, even with an American team, understanding your taste for the bike are always difficult. And track time is, you know, track setup time is minimal. Even with that said, there's no question. Yeah, exactly. And even with that said, whatever the hell that was, even with that said, there's no question that this bike's not going to be on the podium by the end of the weekend.
Cool. Wow. That is a lofty goal. Well done. I figured that was probably Miller or somebody being an idiot in the background.
Maybe it was Miller's maid, seeing that Messi's probably made out of his room.
All right. Hey, Jeremy, thank you for taking the time to have a chat with us, dude.
No problem. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Enjoy yourself. Be safe, of course. We will try and figure out a way here in the States, because we're always screwed in being able to watch Macau live, but we always figure out a way somehow to do it anyway.
Yeah.
Have a good time, and show us what you can do, my friend.
I appreciate that. Good talking to you.
Cool. Same here, dude. Be good.
See ya.
All right. So that was cool. I kind of like Jeremy reminds me in a way of Mark in his candid nature, if you will. And it was very, very cool. Once again, thank you, Paul Kelly, for allowing us to join you guys and the rest of the journos for the chat with Mark Marquez. You heard probably that thing that I alluded to, which was when Marquez was watching Danny and Jorge go at it, he was just kind of shaking his head. That was good stuff. Macau. The Macau GP is just done. We're recording this on Saturday, the 16th. The show that was originally intended for Wednesday, but close enough, right? It is the off season. Of the people that we've had on the show over the last month, including this show, Jeremy Toy took sixth spot. Mark Miller took 11th. Well done, coming from 20th. Not a very great qualifying. Brandon Cretu finished in 20th spot, up 8 positions. But the big news from this race weekend is the return and the win, frankly, from Ian Hutchinson.
Yeah, I woke up to that news this morning, and I'd seen that he'd taken pole the other day, but I was incredibly surprised and definitely impressed that he'd managed to come back and win straight away after the terrible injuries he'd had.
Yep. And it has been a long, winding road back. I remember in 2011, when I was at the TT, and his first ride back was a demo lap. And I have a blurry photo that I took in the paddock there. Actually none in the paddock, up on Glen Crutchery Road, as he was walking up to his bike. And his leathers he had custom made to fit over the cage that he had over his leg. And I'm like, okay, they're Iron Man in more ways than one. I mean, it was absolutely brilliant and incredible. And there were a lot of people who were saying there's no way that he's ever coming back. And to come back and dominate, and it was a solid win. He was pulling away from Michael. Let's give you your top five here real quick. Ian Hutchison, Michael Rutter, Gary Johnson, John McGinnis, and James Starrar, followed by Jeremy Toy. He was pulling away. Now, the race was red flag with a couple of laps left to go, but that did not affect the finish of the race. The guys had actually become fairly spread out by that point. Everything was run under pretty nice conditions, frankly. We did not have a lot of injuries at the race. Another good thing. But as Mark said, Mark posted, you said, well, nobody was killed. I'm like, hey, great. Which in a way is one of those things that you have to celebrate at an event like this. But Macau went off pretty clean and it was a lot of fun to watch. We still managed to get a live feed over here in the U.S. I sat there and chatted back and forth with Mark's mother during the race. It was cool. And so Macau kind of marks, in a way, Harry, the end of the race season. It's kind of the capstone, if you will.
Yeah, there were definitely a few tweets of, well, now what do we do? It's just, well, I guess there's another superbike test or two.
Yeah, you've not been on the air with us in prior past, but we always kind of get to this spot sometime in November and we're like, oh. And so on that note, folks that listen to the show, we will probably take maybe a week break before we come back. But in the meantime, what does that mean? It's not like we're not doing anything. I do my usual, which is go out and chase down interviews, of which I've got some great ones pending. It's all a matter of actually capturing them. And the ones that we get during the off season are in some ways more incredible and amazing than the ones we get during the year, because people are free to speak their minds. If I can get more interviews like the one that you heard with Jeremy Toy, where people are honest about everything, those are the kind that I like to bring you guys during the off season. And it gives us the opportunity to kind of branch out into different things. Temples of Speed, a series which you guys seem to like a lot, came from the off season. It was an idea that came to us from a listener, by a listener, and is being done by a listener. This is a community show in a way. And well, heck, Harry, you were a fan before you became a host,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I was definitely a fan. And then I talked to Jules because he was at a race I was at and got him to interview one of my riders, and then it all just snowballed from there. But yeah, definitely a fan first.
Yeah, yeah. Now you're trapped.
Yeah. Now I can't leave, even if I wanted to. Someone send help.
Yeah, that's funny. So that's a reminder. If you'd like to end up involved with this mayhem, you can start by writing in to motopod@motopodcast.com. And that's when we get the hooks in. And next thing you know, you're spending an awful lot of time talking to other people out there and hearing what they have to say back. It's not, by the way, it's not like we need a lot more hosts. I'm already doing a lot of cat herding right now. So.
Yeah. Yeah. The last few days has been a lot of people sending emails and,
yeah, who?
Anyone going to respond?
No. And in fact, you're actually taking over some of those roles for me. I'll pull them back in a bit. Just to run down the rest of the Macau results. We got down to Jeremy Toy, Martin Jessup, Didier Grams, Lee Johnson, Stephen Thompson, Mark Miller, Dean Harrison, Andre Perez, Jamie Hilton, Hervé Gantner, Ian Lacher, Paul Shoesmith, Alan John Benter, Sander Bitter, Brandon Cretu, and so on and so forth down the way. A tip of the hat to Ben Wiley, who spent a day and a half in the hospital after having a get off, banged up his knee and still managed to come out and do quite well in the race. So, good stuff. We can close this thing out. What do you think, Harry? Just a major thank you to all those people out there that have sent in some funds. Of course, our regular subscribers and new donators for this week, which were mentioned earlier in the show. If you'd like to help contribute to the show, and we could really use it, especially over the winter months, that's when things get quiet. You can do so by going to www.motopodcast.com, where the show comes from. On the left-hand side of the page, about a quarter of the way down, you'll see some yellow buttons. You can either become a subscriber, which is regular. You don't have to do anything. It'll just happen every month, a small amount. Or throw us a couple bucks just straight away as a donation. Either way is great. And we will always get back to you one way or another, right into us, whatever. Harry, let's put this thing to bed because it's going to be December before we get it out.
Yeah, it will be. No, I think we definitely need a rest, like a lot of the riders. It's especially towards the end of the season, it gets really, really hectic.
It does, and frankly, I am ready for one. You've got your small entry joining us near the end of the season, so you're going to need to build up some energy because next year is going to be nuts.
Can't wait.
No. All right. Thank you, everybody, for downloading the show. Thank you for listening to us, and we will talk to you soon.
Yep. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye. Perfect.
Okay. Sweet.
That'll be easy.
Yeah, shouldn't be too hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I might even be able to edit that tonight and upload it tomorrow. I'll see how that goes, though.
That'd be cool, mate. You be...
Bueno, estoy muy contento de cómo ha ido el test. Hoy nos hemos centrado con una moto, con el prototipo que me encontré mejor ayer, y nos hemos centrado en probar algunos settings de electrónica, después también algunas configuraciones de la moto, así que bueno, estoy contento de cómo ha ido, porque hemos cogido muchísima información y esto pues irá bien, ¿no?, para que Honda pueda trabajar en este invierno y llevar alguna mejora en Malasia.